That ru, I should have made it long. It should be rupa namini. Rupa, long ru. Got to type it. My typo. Okay. Ka, the, like this ending. Ka, vayu, agni, jala, urvi, urvishu. Okay. Deva, tiryak, nara, adishu. Abhinnaha, sachidanandaha, bhidyete, rupa, namani. So, ka means space. Vayu, the wind. Agni, fire. Jala, water. Urvi, the earth. So these are the five elements, space, air, water, fire, earth. So in these five elements, in these five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, when I'm helping with the Sanskrit a little bit and I say like 7-3 or 6-1, six is the genitive case, seven is the locative case, one is singular, two is dual, three is plural, and so in Sanskrit they have these vibhaktis that are, go from nominative to accusative, which would be two, instrumental would be three, dative would be four, ablative would be five, genitive would be six, and locative would be seven. So if I say 5-1, that's ablative singular. So it's just a little code that the Michika in India uses so that you don't have to use too many words. You just say 7-1, okay, locative singular, like that. So when you hear these numbers, that's what it is. It's defining a particular vibhakti, a particular grammatical use of a word. Okay, so these five elements ending in, you know, urvishu is going to be in the locative plural, which would be 7-3. And then deva. Deva means the gods. Tiryak means animals. Nara means human beings. Adi, and whatever other living creatures are there. So the gods, the animals, the human beings, the nara, and adi, which could mean like the insects and the fish and, yeah, whatever jivas are there. So the first one have to do with the elements. Second one has to do in reference to all of the living beings, all of the jivas. So for all of these, abhinnaha sachidanandaha. The sachidananda, which is my own nature, which is Brahman, the Atma, which is Brahman. Brahman is, what is Brahman? Conscious being. The Sat is being, existence, Chit, consciousness. Ananda is that limitless fullness. So Sachidananda is called a lakshana, a definition that can only be applied to the self, which is Brahman. You can't call anything, you can't say anything else as Sachidananda. There is nothing that is both existence and consciousness and limitless. So lakshana, you know, maybe some of you, if you're interested in language and in the use of definitions, to have a real definition of a thing, of a given thing, that definition has to only apply to to that thing. That's what's called lakshana. You can have a definition, you know, like black, or like blue, or like tall. There's so many tall things, there's so many black things. It's not really definitions. They can be indicators in a particular sense, but they're not a definition of the thing. It's not that easy to come up with a real definition where those words are only going to be landing on that given vastu, on that given thing. So the Satchidananda is a lakshana. It's an actual definition that applies only to the Atma, which is Brahman. So there is no other being which is consciousness, which is limitless. So here it says, this Satchidanandaha, these, what we are looking at as the Sat, the Chit, and Ananda. That's why the plural, right? Both existence, consciousness, and limitlessness are abhinnaha. They are not different. They are exactly the same in all of the five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, and in all living creatures. So in the element, if you say the elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, you're including the elementals like space. I'm like water combines with earth to make mud. Fire heats the water to make it hot, etc. These are all elementals, the combining of the elements, the using of the elements to build things, like say a bird builds a nest out of pieces of wood, that type of thing. You're utilizing the elements. Human beings grow because from food, but the food also is an elemental because it's really just a modification of the five elements that are allowing the food to grow. So all of the nama rupas that we have are actually elementals. See what I mean? In terms of this physical world that we perceive through our sense organs, they're the elements, the five elements themselves, or a combination of these elements. So here's what thing is saying, that the Satchidananda Brahman, which is my own being, right, that is exactly the same in each of the five elements. It means what is the adhishtana? What is the adhishtana of space, of air, of fire, of water, of earth? Do they have some other substance that makes them be what they are? No. All of them have for their being just the one non-dual Atma, which is Brahman. And so just as, and in the same way, all of the devas, because in the Hindu cosmology we have subtler levels going up, like heaven worlds going up and hell worlds going down, we're right in the middle. So the ones that are going up, they're considered devalokas, where different beings are abiding that have a more subtle existence in one way or another than we do. The devas are usually three or four lokas up, and in the highest loka, where they have a certain capacities and a greater range of capability, but they're still jivas. And they've just taken a more exalted upadhi, a more exalted conditioning adjunct. There's more expression of ananda. There's more capacity that the body has. There's a much more longevity, that type of thing. But whatever the upadhi be, whether it be the upadhi, the conditioning adjunct in the form of a devata, of a god, a deva or a god, whatever you call them. What do you say besides God? All of the different gods. Okay, the devas are many, many devas, many gods. Okay. Or if you take to be all of the living creatures or all of the humans, these are all nama rupas, They all have sukshma shariras. That's what they have in common in terms of reflecting consciousness, enjoying consciousness and doership. But what is their essential nature? Essential nature is the Satchidatma. The difference between the jivas in the form of devas or animals or human beings or insects or whatever being has a subtle body, and the five elements and elementals is that the five elements themselves don't reflect consciousness from their own perspective. They are illumined by consciousness. They enjoy being known, whereas the jivas enjoy being known, just like I know you, I'm aware of you. But from your own standpoint, you become a knower, right? So you are both known and a knower, where all of the elements and elementals are not knowers, they are just known. That's the distinction there, because it all rests on whether or not you have a sukshma sharira, a subtle body or not. And the reason you have knowership is not because you own consciousness, but because you have sattva, which allows for that reflection of consciousness. Right? I use the example of the mirror again. The mirror is inert, it's jada. But the material reflects the sun, it reflects whatever is there. The sukshma sharira, the subtle body, is jada. It is inert in that it is not the source itself. It's not self-shining. It requires consciousness to illuminate. And then consciousness illuminating it like the mirror, it manifests that consciousness in a type of reflection, as though. And so here, what it's saying is that if you have to go back to the previous verse, we have this group of five amshas, the sat, the asti bhati priyam namarupa, right? Or asti bhati priyam rupam namamcha iti amsha panchakam, this group of five. So now in this verse is relating back to this previous verse, and what it says is the Satchidananda, in this group of five, the asti bhati priyam, the Satchidananda, is the Adhishtana. It is the same in all of the elements. It is the same in all of the beings. It is the Adhishtana of the whole universe. Right? So everything that is objectifiable, the entire universe and everything in it, enjoys the Satchit Ananda as its Adhishtana, as its very being. And there's no change anywhere in that. So there's one existence, and that one existence is the Adhishtana, the existence that the entire creation enjoys. And that existence is self-evident consciousness. Okay. So saying that, so the Satchitananda, Satchitananda'a, is the Satchitananda, these are abhinnaha, they are not different or distinct. They are there in every experience that you have. They are really the Adhishtana, the Sat, which is Chit, which is Ananda. They're not distinct from each other, but they're also the very being of everything in the creation. Both the jivas, those things which reflect consciousness, and the elements and elementals which don't. All of them are known, all of them exist. Some of the jivas reflect consciousness. Some of them at times are happy, so they're reflecting ananda. At other times they're sad and not reflecting ananda. Ananda, but the ananda, the satchit ananda, is always there, right? As me, not necessarily being reflected. The sun illumining a muddy water bucket is not reflected in the muddy water, but it is reflected in the clear water. So I'm always struggling as a human being. I'm always struggling for the clear water, right? I want the shantavritti. When I have a shantavritti, I feel like myself, because I don't know of any other self. I only know the self, me, the one that is continually changing. With knowledge, I start to recognize that I am a stable self, because of which all of these changes are known. That's viveka. That is a huge, it just makes such a difference in my life, in my inner space, because there's somebody who's a constant. And it's not just anybody. The Satchitananda Atma is the very ananda, the very, what I seek in life, actually. That's why we say moksha, liberation. I seek wholeness or fullness, or that sense of being me, absolutely whole and complete, to be myself. And that self is what's projected out onto the world and I run after it. I have to discover the source of that as being my own nature. So that's the tremendous freedom. So he says the Satchitananda is abhinnaha. It is non-divided. It's the very Adhishtana of all of these experiences, of all of the elements and of all of the jivas of the whole creation. Bidyate rupanamini. The nama rupa in the creation, that is definitely divided, right? There are countless, infinite number of names and forms. One is distinct from the other, is distinct from the other, is distinct from the other. But the being is not distinct. Everything equally enjoys being. Everything equally enjoys knownness. The ananda is the recognition of the quality, not a quality that comes and goes, but the very nature the very, using a dangerous word, experiential nature of me. Like I said, maybe at some point to do this meditation, what am I like? What is this, my being, which is conscious being? How to describe me? You know, what do they mean by ananda? It's not ananda, it's not what they mean by that ananda, fullness or bliss, sometimes they translate, very dangerous translation. Dangerous because are you in bliss right now? No, where's the bliss, right? But yourself is always here, so they can't mean bliss. They have to mean that nature that is self-evident all the time. So right now, at this moment or at any moment, what qualifies, I can identify my being, the conscious being. Why do they say ananda? That's what has to be recognized. It's not a bliss experience. It's not an experience that comes and goes. It's the abiding nature of myself, which is really the most dear to me. No matter what vritti is happening, what experience is there, by ananda, what is the most beloved, right? What is the most beloved? And that is the nature of yourself. There's nothing more beloved. It's not an experience. You go, oh, you know, I'm blessed, or something like that. It's subtle, but it couldn't be more meaningful to realize that what is most dear to you is your own being. Just to give you an example, you know. Somebody says, you know, when you die, you will go to heaven. You've lived a really good life, beautiful life, so when you die, you will go to heaven. Say really what we would say in the Christian world, when you die, if you've been devout, followed Dharma, etc., your soul will go to heaven. Your soul will go to heaven. Now the thing is, do you care? And the only way, in my opinion, the only way that that would be meaningful to you is if when they say your soul will go to heaven, that means that you, this me, who is here right now, when this body drops, will continue and will go to a beautiful place. But even the going to the beautiful place, the soul goes to the beautiful place, unless I take the soul to be a synonym to the me that is here right now, that's nice, but what about me? Am I going to go? You know, what about me? Even the same as you're a jiva, you are the transmigrating entity. I have to recognize, though, that this transmigrating jiva that takes birth after birth after birth means that I, this person who is here right now as me, wearing this body, mind, sense organs as a dress, that it is this very me that I identify with now as me, that I will continue on, taking body after body after body based upon my karmas. And so the one who is here now has been the one who has been there in many different lifetimes. When we take a birth, you know, but they, from a Hindu perspective, So we take all these births, but normally your memories, the chitta, I mean that memory bank of all of these births and that continuity from birth to birth to birth, you're closed off from until this body drops, and then that memory line opens up again. It's closed off, except in some instances. You know, for some children, it doesn't close off, and they do have quite a memory of their last birth, and they can describe it, and who their parents were, and where they lived, and all this kind of stuff. You know, so, but normally it will close off, even though there's several instances of it not closing off. But the thing is, unless I know, when I'm talking about reincarnation, that it's me that's going to be reincarnating, I'm not that interested. There's some soul, somebody, who cares? What happens to me? This was Nachiketa's question in the Katha Upanishad to Lord Yama, the Lord of Death. He said to Yama, you're the one who would know this because you're the Lord of Death. Tell me what will happen to me, Nachiketa. You know, When I die, will I still be here? If I lose this body and everything, will I still be here? Even in the whole Upanishadic tradition, a student always approaches the teacher and asks the teacher, so, 'cause I think in this culture, in the West, we haven't properly understood the simple question. The student will approach the Guru Sisha will approach the teacher and say, I don't know who I am. But they're talking about this me, the me who is here right now. I don't know who I am in the sense I don't know what happens to me when I die, you know? Or right now, what is my relationship with Ishvara, with the Lord? Who am I, really, you know? What is my relationship with Dharma and Adharma? And this sukha-dukha, this Ferris wheel, you know? This ride of happy-sad. Who am I in all of that? Is there any way to put me on the shore where I don't have to go through this very wavy ride? Is there any resting place for me, this me, that is now having this body and this life? So when the sisha, when the student goes to the guru, they're not asking about, who am I really? Who is that big self that is looking down on this little self here? You know? We don't understand the absolute simplicity of the question. I want to know who I am, this person who is here right now. Do I survive death? Not does a soul survive death. Do I survive death? Who am I, the one who is here now? That's, at least in my era, this was a confusion. I never took these very simple questions to be that personal. They're actually, the question was asking about me, who am I, you know? It always had this big self, little self, or some soul type of thing. Who is the soul, you know? Who is the soul that goes to heaven? That's a lot different question than, who am I? Am I the one that goes to heaven? See what I mean? Much different question. And so here the Upanishad is a means of knowledge that's holding up a teacher and holding up a mirror to the you that has come to the teacher to find out who exactly you are and what happens to me and what am I doing here. You know, I remember when I was in high school, kind of saying a prayer to Bhagavan, why am I here? What am I doing here? What's my purpose? Who am I? You know, I really wanted to know, and then I tried to imagine him coming down and telling me. So I got a little carried away. There, but nevertheless, the question was there. It's very real for me. So here, this conscious being that is me, this very personal me, is I am, and I am self-evident. I don't need to bring in another pramana, another means of knowledge to light me up. I am self-evident conscious being, and there is nothing more dear to me. If I know I'm going to heaven, or I am transmigrating, I'm interested. If I think I'm the one that's going to die, I didn't want that. I don't want to die. I want to die if I continue on. Then it's okay. But I want to be, I want to live. I may not want to be depressed, or I don't want to be agitated, or I don't want bad things to happen to me to cause sorrow. I want all those things to change, like good things, happy things happen to me. But I want to be. I want to be. You know, that's because your nature is dear to you. Swamiji used to joke and say, people say, I'm not afraid of death at all. No, I don't have any fear of death. And he'd say, okay, let's do it right now. And you say, no, not right now. I don't have fear of death or anything, but not right now. I want to be, I want to live. You know? When that kind of tongue, you know, he says that tongue in cheek. There's some truth in it. You may not have no fear of death, but it's not that I want it to happen now. I love my life. Even Swamiji said, I love my life. I love my life. He loved his life, loved his being. You know? Just that he knew his being was so stable, nothing going to happen. You know? But he also loved his life. He loved so many people. He loved the temple. You know, he loved the murtis in the temple. You know, when he went to what he knew would be his last puja, he just cried at the beauty of the puja, you know, and the beauty of the murtis and the sanctity of that temple. And he said something like, Sharada, somebody told me, I don't remember who told me this. He said something like, this is the last time I will see this. It's so beautiful, but this is my last time that I will see this. And he cried. Yeah. So beautiful. But he's fine, you know. But he's not afraid to love and have those experiences. So the Satchitananda, the Ananda, that is my Ananda, think of it as that which is most dear rather than as a happy experience. That there really is nothing more dear to you than your own self. Let's do the next verse.
Upeksha nama rupe dve. Satchidananda tattaraha. Samadhim sarvada kuryat. Riddhaye vata bhavahihi.
Upeksha nama rupe dve. Satchidananda tattaraha. Samadhim sarvada kuryat riddayeva atava bahihi. This verse is a verse that we can do to end this section, and it's a verse that I will do to start this next section. Right? It both ends and begins a new section. So I decided we should just do it because it winds something up. It says, having in more than one word, it says kind of like, having understood, having gained this vision, then what? So he says, upeksha namarupe dve. Giving up or becoming, in a sense, indifferent to. Now, by indifferent to doesn't mean just blah. It means that I have vairagya. I have a dispassion where I can be with this world and all of the namarupas, all of the names and forms, in a way where I can be with it and not require that it be in a particular way to make me happy. That's vairagya. The great example Swamiji used to always use for vairagya is the little child that has helium balloons. You know, have you ever had these helium balloons? Or have your child have helium balloons? You know, it's walking along holding on for dear life, you know. Because if they let go, those balloons are going to go up. So they're hanging on to the balloons and loving them and loving having them. And then, of course, something happens. They lose their attention for a minute or something, and there it goes. And for a little child, that is a big loss. That's a big loss. You know, you feel so badly, you want to go and buy some more balloons for your child, okay? Because they lost their balloon, right? Such a tragedy. Tragedy has happened. Balloon is gone. You can't get it back. Or somebody sticks a pin in it and pops it. That's a meaning. That's mean. Okay. So that also creates so much pain and angst and all of this, right? The helium balloons. There's no vairagya. For a child does not have vairagya for a helium balloon, right? But an adult does. For an adult, maybe you got a helium balloon too. And maybe as you're playing, or you're going with your kids, and the kids are playing with their helium balloon, your daughter's little helium balloon goes up, you know, and she's so upset, and then longingly she looks at your helium balloon. And what did you say? No! This is my balloon! This is mine! Like another child would probably say that. You can probably just say, here, you can have my balloon. Hang on more tightly now. Hang on more tightly. And you have no sorrow, no loss. You're very happy to let your child, or your even little friend, or little even little waif on the street, whatever. You're so lucky, you're so happy, but then have this balloon and enjoy it. You have vairagya. You can enjoy the helium balloon, and you can enjoy not having the helium balloon. You can enjoy possessing something, you can enjoy giving that thing away. There, that is vairagya. It has nothing negative about it. It's freedom. I can love what I have, and I can be without it also, and I'm completely fine. That's vairagya. So we don't think of dispassion. It's not that. It's freedom. Freedom to enjoy being with something and to have and to be fine when it goes, because that's the nature of the creation. So what if you don't have that vairagya? It's kind of a sorrowful state, because you can't win that game. The only way to win that game is to be free of having to need something to be in a particular way and to be able to enjoy being with what is. That's the vairagya. And so upeksha is talking, this word is a indefinable past participle. It's saying, you know, having that vairagya, having that dispassion, that indifference, not in a negative way, but I can have it and enjoy it, and if it's gone, it's fine. So toward both nama-rupa, nama-rupe dway, both names and forms, these two things, because he's listed five here, asti, bhati, priyam, nama-rupa. So these two things, you know, are multi and varied, and they're subject to change. They're what make up the jagat, the world. So having vairagya toward both of these, nama and rupa, being satchidananda tatparaha. This word tatparaha, it's really a compound. What it means is being devoted to that. Tat means that. It's a pronoun, tat. Paraha means the one for whom that is supreme. That is the most important, tatparaha. For that supreme means parama. Right? The one for whom that is supreme, and in English we would say, being devoted to that, having that be what is most important or what is primary to you, and what would that tatparaha be? Satchidananda. The Satchidananda Atma, which is Brahman. So that Satchidananda Atma requires knowledge. You can't say, oh, Satchidananda Brahman, whatever that means, is tatparaha, that's what I'm devoted to. That Satchidananda, the nature of myself, I have to know. I have to have knowledge of that, or it's just some words, right? So that Satchidananda tatparaha, that being what is where my heart is, what is most meaningful to me, so be one for whom the Satchidananda Atma, the Ananda, the truth, the Adhishtana of this whole creation, that which is the very being of the entire creation, let that being which is me, you know, be where my focus is. And let all, may I have vairagya to everything else. You don't need to have vairagya towards yourself because it can't go anywhere. Right? You don't need dispassion towards yourself because you can never get rid of it. It doesn't come into being, it doesn't go out of being, nobody can take it away from you, even you can't change it, even the Ishwara cannot take it away. It is the Adhishtana of Ishwara also, the very truth of Ishwara also. So let my devotion or my love be toward that which is the source of love itself, that which is the very Ananda, that which is actually the most beloved, and that which because of ajnanam, because of self-ignorance, is sparkling in the world all of the time. Every little shantavritti, so you get a little shantavritti, and this object has caused that shantavritti, so that ananda pops up, you know, that reflects in the mind, and when you feel, I want that. Why do you want that? Ananda, because it makes me so happy, right? and then that no longer makes me happy, it becomes garage sale material. Okay? It no longer has the capacity to make me happy, but then another little, you know, experience where I get a shantavritti, another experience gives me a shantavritti. Oh, that makes me so happy. Let's do that all of the time, right? Because why? Because it makes me happy. But all that's really happening, I'm getting a shantavritti because a desire has been fulfilled or a situation creates just a resolution in my mind, and I feel so happy. I feel like myself, and that has caused it, whatever that may be. So then my that becomes tat paraha for me. I become devoted to that. I want that, because I want that ananda. So now, realizing now, with all this teaching, realizing that these nama-rupas, all of them without exception, they don't really have the ananda. They're mitya. The ananda is the non-objectifiable source of all being. It is yourself. You're never away from that. So let the tatparaha, that devotion, be toward the source of the ananda itself, which is me, not toward some object that it's projected upon, and then of course will drip off at some point. We've all experienced that over and over again. So giving up your attachment to all of these nama-rupas, let the tatparaha, let the devotion really be to the ananda itself, to the satchitananda, my own, this me, my own being. So that being so, then what? Samadhim sarvada kuriyat. May you always, sada means always, indeclinable, kuriyat, potential, the ling, vidiling, kuriyat. May let one do, not may you do, let one do, 3-1, let one do, sarvada, let one always do, samadhi. May you always practice samadhi. Means may you always bring your mind to yourself. Either, he says, hridaye in that samadhi, in the heart, atava, or else externally. I'll talk about this just for a moment, but the next like 15 verses or so are talking about different types of samadhi. Okay. So the first one, that there, he's making two major categories here for samadhi. And then get into nirvikalpa samadhi and savikalpa samadhi and all of these different types of meditative practices. But the essence is this. Let your mind enjoy, be with yourself. Fulfill its ananda quotient from the ananda, the fullness itself. So being with myself, in always recognizing myself, you know, may I live my life. So always being in samadhi. When we say that, we are always meditating like this, but it's not really that. We do that for some time. We just meditate with be with myself. I let my mind, my buddhi, just go and abide with me. That's in the heart. So in my heart means in my buddhi. I let my buddhi just gently focus on my own presence, being with me, being with the very source of ananda. That's one type of samadhi, so that I can get used to myself. Because actually, there's no time ever that I'm not here. There's no time ever that I'm not the very self, the being of the buddhi itself. And so the buddhi, there comes a time when the buddhi does not need to focus on myself, or because I know that viveka is there. So I'm always present, and I'm always shining in the buddhi, and I'm living my life. So I'm always in samadhi. You practice samadhi until you're always in samadhi. But don't think I'm walking around in samadhi like this. That's what people say. When we say the word samadhi, we think, now what if I say, yeah, I'm always in samadhi. Uh-oh, because how can I come out of that? If I take all my sense organs and mind are just resolving into to the self, I can do that privately, quietly, in meditation. But actually, whether my eyes are open or closed, the same me is there, whether the mind is focused on me or not focused on me. I am the samadhi, actually, you know. It's a beautiful verses in the Aparokshanabhuti, another Prakarna Granta says, you think you only have to sit, you have to sit to do samadhi, to be in samadhi. So what are you not in samadhi? Because there's never a time when you're not here. But to really give the mind, called nididhyasana, that chance to just sit with me, to be with me, to get to know me, instead of so much of this, you know, this mutual superimposition where there is no differentiation between me and my experiences. I practice meditation, either just resolving my mind into me, being myself, resolving into me, being myself, like the meditations we've been doing. Or when we do Drikdrisha Viveka again, or when I do it someplace else, I'll give it to Malika and then she can let you all know and you can go on the website and I'll see continued. Drikdrisha Viveka continued and I'll put those verses there. Okay. So anyway, we can also use other devices. We can use Shabda words to help us resolve into myself. Like if I say, for instance, Anandoham, I am Ananda. And I have recognized what the word Ananda means, so that when I say the word, it resolves into the Ananda, which is myself. Just to understand quickly here, there's an incredible relationship between the nama, the name, and the form. So for instance, if I say to you, rose, the word rose, a rose appears. Right? Because immediately the nama invokes the rupa. On a subtle level, it's not a physical rose that appears. But if I say rose, a rose appears. If I say tree appears. You know? If I say boat appears. A car appears. Whatever the nama is, as long as I know the meaning, Swamiji will joke and say, what if I were to say gagubuga? What appears? Just, what is that? That's I don't know. Nothing appears. So, when the nama has meaning, so say you say, I am consciousness, and I know I have recognized through the teaching, or I am chit. You know, I recognize through the teaching that this word is now holding me, or I am Brahman, or I am Ishwara. As long as these words evoke that reality, like if you say rose is evoked. If I say Ishwara, my understanding of Ishwara is evoked. Or if I say, I am Asanga, I am not attached to anything, that is evoked. If I say, I am conscious being, and I know what that means, that is evoked. So I can use Shabda, I can use words in order for my meditation, because the word takes me, it evokes the reality that the word is representing in a very profound way. So the Drikdrisha, this Drikdrisha Viveka has a large section on meditation using things that are more external, like sounds or words, or even meditating on a deity. There's many different ways that I can meditate in order to resolve into myself using external. Usually he's talking about Shabda, different sorts of words or sounds. I can use these for my meditative practice to resolve into myself. I can also do a meditation on Ishwara, seeing that this body, mind, sense organs are all one with Ishwara, and then say Ishwara, oh, I am Ishwara. This whole body, mind, sense organs, everything is given to Ishwara. Then I recognize that my being, which is self, is uncontained, is the being of that whole experience. That's the way we did today, I think. We imagine Ishwara, you know? You just imagine Ishwara, imagine just all of your experiences, and notice that you are not contained. Your being is not contained. All of the experiences exist in you. But now I'm utilizing these experiences for this samadhi, right? And so there are many different types of samadhi. So what he's saying is giving up your lack of having vairagya toward the world, you know, turn your attention toward the Satchidatma, which is the Adhishtana of the whole creation, toward my own being. And always do samadhi. You always recognize yourself. Now, just to again break through this thing, so you don't think you have to sit around and meditate all the time, which meditation is beautiful, but every time throughout the day, in one moment, you can have that self-recognition. You can recognize, all of this is Ishwara, just recognize your own presence. Or just in a split second, you know, throughout the day, you just recognize your own being. You say, I used to say like this, I'm still here. Because it wasn't at first, you know, that I'd recognize kind of this, the me. But then I didn't know that it would, I wasn't positive that it wouldn't go away, you know. So you just recognize yourself But do that differentiation, take a split second. You know? Those are little moments of recognition, little tiny moments of samadhi, where my mind is just for the moment recognizing myself. You do it all the time throughout the day. Swamiji once said, I rest between my thoughts. You know, meaning he's doing this and doing that, but all the while he's rooted in his own being. Your thoughts and the things that you do are not really covering you at all. You have to get used to that. You know, you can use the meditations that we've done, practice your own meditations to recognize that. But no matter how busy you are, no matter what you're doing, you're still there. You know? Always there. There's never a time that you're not there. You have to get used to yourself. It's not that you haven't always been here, it's just that the superimposition has been problematic. Because I don't differentiate myself from my experiences. You have to. Okay. I'm done. Do Purnamada? It's up to you. It's up to you.
Okay.
Well, do Purnamada, yeah? And then Swasima.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's works.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari
Things come. I know. Things come. Yes, yes.
Full and beautiful as we can ever be. Radhe.
That's most beautiful song. All of well. Get a flower from each of you. Is that what it is?
And we now have something from Malika, who's with so much devotion, really so much devotion and care and love, has put this opportunity together so we can all be here. And she's just giving it out of pure devotion, I think.
Yes.
And so we've got a small gift, and here's another small gift from all of us. And in a card that has been made by our lovely Wendy Devi.
Wow.
Quite an artist. So it's
that's right, Wendy.
Devotion,
yeah. In spirit also.
What I want is Swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahimahishah gobrahmanebhyah shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini Desho yam chobarahitaha brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarvesham swastir bhavatu sarvesham shantir bhavatu sarvesham purnam bhavatu sarvesham mangalam bhavatu sarve bhavantu sukhinah sarve santu niramayah sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kashchit dukha bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritam gamaya om Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi